Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land, farms, and buying and selling and ownership, and especially for real estate agents and realtors to learn about land issues. Learn from the experts. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant, broker owner, United Country Real Estate, Dash Land Pro, buying or selling homes, land or farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia. Give us a shout. We're the experts who can help you out. Our office is at 3349 Cook School Road, Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, Highway 52, exit 136 across from Foothills Hardware and Building Supply. We share office space with POP Design for all your graphic needs. Our website, company website, is www.mylandpro.com. I'm a member of the Realtors Land Institute, the voice of land. We have around 1,300 members nationwide and approximately 500 ALCs, accredited land consultants like myself. Agents that become RLI members are the best in the business because they get access to exclusive continuing education and networking opportunities, property marketing tools, and discounts on industry services. If you are looking for an agent in your area with land and farm expertise, you can find an RLI member or accredited land consultant like myself using the Find a Land Consultant tool on our website homepage, which is www.rliland.com. As a United Country franchise, we offer more than 90 years of real estate experience. Since 1925, United Country Real Estate has matched buyers and sellers with lifestyle properties of their dreams. Our unmatched network features over 600 offices and over 5,000 agents. Our national website is www.unitedcountry.com, which averages about 3.5 million plus hits a month, and buyer database usually around 600 to 650,000 at any given time. We also offer a full range of auction services. We have over 3,000 websites, vertical websites, targeting local markets, and we are the premier real estate and auction company devoted to the rural markets. Our guest today is David Farmer. Welcome, David.
Thank you,
Lou. We're glad to have you on. We're going to talk about several things today. Let me just kind of introduce you a little bit. You got some acronyms that I'm not familiar with. What's an, like my ALC, what's an AICP designation?
Yes, but I'm a member of the American Planning Association, and for those planners that have reached a certain expertise, you're eligible for testing for the accredited, American Institute of Certified Planners.
So okay.
AICP, American Institute of Certified Planners.
Mm-hmm.
The next acronym is PE, that stands for a Licensed Professional Engineer in the state of Florida.
Okay.
The next acronym is CGC, which stands for Certified General Contractor. That in Florida, that's the highest designation of contracting you can get. And then, of course, I'm also the CEO of Metro Forecasting Models.
Okay, and that's in Bonita, is that the way it's pronounced, Springs, Florida?
Bonita Springs. Bonita is Spanish for beautiful.
I'd say.
Bonita Springs, Florida.
And what's that located near?
That's basically right near Fort Myers, Florida, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, if you looked at a map and looked at Miami and drew a straight line due west, you would run into us.
Okay, gotcha. So, you're nationally recognized professional engineer and certified city planner with extensive experience in real estate development, planning and civil engineering modeling, infrastructure design and construction. David is an expert in housing demand analysis, commercial demand analysis, and land use allocation. You began your career as a land developer in around 1989 with an engineering firm designing commercial and residential projects for private clients. And then you left the engineering firm around 2000 to work a full-time land development company overseeing project planning, entitlement, design, and construction of residential communities, resorts, facilities, commercial, and commercial projects. Subsequently, you earn your certified general contractor's license, which you mentioned the highest you can get in Florida, and accepted an additional responsibility for permitting and construction and custom homes, as well as selection of land and acquisition. Your development expertise, urban planning, engineering background provides extensive knowledge and expertise in metro forecasting models, which is your company. His mathematical skills and understanding of population growth drives drivers provide metro forecasting models with the judgment necessary to interpret the implications of the scientific forecast. You've brokered more than $70 million in real estate transactions and entitled thousands of homes and millions of square footage of commercial property. David is a former chairman of the Southwest Florida District Council for the Urban Land Institute and is a national instructor for the Urban Land Institute. And that's going to be our subject today. But I just want to talk a little bit about your company. And David, I'm going to invite you to come back in the future. And I just want to do a whole show because the type of work and the way you've built your organization is unbelievable and needs to be shared with the listening audience. But the MFP, population aggregate forecast model to build out methodology is beginning step in development of interactive growth model, which is trademarked, for the metro area. The resulting product is forecast and an aggregate population and a five-year increment to build out and services as a key input for the interactive growth model registered and therefore to our proprietary submodels. David's been a member of the Urban Land Institute since 2000, was the district council chairman for the Southwest Florida chapter, graduate of the University of Florida in civil engineer, transportation, hydraulics, subdivision design, 1893. Wow, you're an old fella. Nice typo there, Rodney. To 1996, where he was president of the United Fund chapter for American Society of Civil Engineers. Edison State Community College engineer from 91 to 93. David is a developer, a licensed real estate broker, a certified planner, civil engineer, state certified general contractor, Department of Environmental Protection qualified stormwater management inspector, and he's also an instructor for the Urban League. You've taught many classes, and I wanted to get into those after we talk about the Urban Lands Institute. That's okay, David. But one of them that I picked up that's coming up that we may want to promote, actually just passed, I'm sorry, was financial analysis for development, a practical introduction, where you calculate residential land values. You've also taught understanding real estate development, and we'll mention the others at the end. But our topic today is the Urban Land Institute, like the Realtors Land Institute. The Realtors Land Institute is for, you know, rural farms, recreational land, country land, where Urban Land Institute is more for the urban areas. You have about 40,000 members, and you're in 96 nations. It's a nonprofit research and education organization with offices in Washington, D.C., Hong Kong, London, and Frankfurt. Its mission statement is to provide leadership in the responsible use of land and creating and sustaining thriving communities worldwide. ULI advocates progressive development, conducting research and education in topics such as sustainable, smart growth, compact development, placemaking, and workforce housing. And their mission statement is to provide leadership in the responsibility use of land and creating and sustaining thriving communities worldwide. ULI is also committed to bringing together leaders from across the fields of real estate and land use policy to exchange the best practices which serves the community needs. And those are fostering collaboration within and beyond UL's membership through mentoring, dialogue, and problem solving. Exploring issues of urbanization and conservation regeneration, land use and capital formation and sustainable development, advancing land use policies and design practices that respect the uniqueness in both the built and natural environments, and sharing the knowledge through education, applied research, publishing, electronic media, and sustaining the diverse global network and local practice and advisory efforts that current and future challenges. So it's quite an organization, David. And like you said, you've been involved since 2000?
Yeah, I a developer friend of mine strongly encouraged me to join this thing that I had never actually really heard of, the Urban Land Institute, and said that it had really helped them out in their career and encouraged me to get just as involved as my time and resources would allow. And so starting back in the early 2000s, I started attending district council programs. So ULI, an interesting organization. There's corporate headquarters are in Washington, D.C. And then throughout the country and actually throughout the world, there are these areas where like-minded people come together, and they're called district councils. And as you mentioned earlier, I was the former chairman of ULI Southwest Florida. There's 5 district councils in Florida. I think there's 4 or 5 in Texas. I think there's over 60 around the country. Some areas only have 1 per state, like maybe, you know, like Alaska or Washington State. But your more developed areas, like California, Texas, Florida, have multiple district councils that serve the needs of the local area. You know, I think it was Bill Clinton that said, or someone said, you know, everything's local. And so it's nice to have a big, you know, worldwide organization. But really, what really brings the power home is that it's meaningful on a local basis to help you understand and be the best you can be at the development field.
So, you know, you bring in obviously professionals and their specialties, but you also bring in other types of people more from the financial side and from the social side and needs and so on, right? It's a kind of a melting pot, isn't it?
It's completely a melting pot, Lou. You hit it right on the head. And one of the great things about ULI, another great thing is that it's a diverse membership. And one of the other great things about ULI is the members inherently are very willing to share their mistakes with you. And I'll tell you, I've learned far more from my mistakes than I have from my successes. You know, if I work on a project and make some money or everything goes smoothly, I just want to pat myself on the back saying, darn, am I good?
Yep.
Where the reality is probably a lot of things went really, really right for me. And it's the willingness of the membership, both instructors and just regular members, sharing with each other, hey, this happened to me, don't let it happen to you, or I had a problem just like that once, and here's how I solved it. Just as an incredible resource for those in the development community or those wanting to aspire to be in the development community, so that we can not repeat, you know, mistakes of the past and hopefully go on and develop things, you know, for society. You know, one of the things that, you know, on one hand, developers have a bad reputation because, you know, it's reported that somehow they make a lot of money. Some do. Many lose money. But the fact is that rarely does anyone else build something than a developer. And so if you're living in a house, it was probably originally conceived of by a developer. You know, if you shop at a shopping center, that was conceived of by a developer. And so development's going to happen. It helps serve the needs of the community. And don't we want it to happen really in the best way possible? When I say best way, I don't necessarily mean something that you're going to like, Lou. You might not like what I'm going to do, but it should be a quality-type project, right? Developers can't please everyone in a specific location, but if we're sensitive to those things around us and make some mitigating strategies about noise, light, sound, whatever, we can coexist together and hopefully have quality projects that are going to stand the test of time and serve the community.
You know, it's very akin to the Realtors Land Institute. We're a big family, not as large as the Urban Land Institute. I think we carry around 1,300 members currently. We're a little over 75 years old. But I'm telling you, it's been the greatest ride I've ever had, not only being an instructor like yourself for the Land Institute, but the networking and camaraderie of my fellow RLI and ALC buddies, guys, landmen and landladies around the country. It's the same thing. You got a problem, you know, this guy's expertise is maybe subdivision. You get on the phone. We have annual conferences. We have live classes, 2-day classes. And the networking is unbelievable. Once you go to one of our land conferences, you'll never miss another one. So, like I said, it's very akin to exactly, I believe, what you expressed of your organization. We're proud to be part of it. So,
just need to cut in here, Lou. Just to that end, I want to tell you or tell our listeners here that, you know, my first time at an RLI event was just 2 years ago.
Right. That's where I met you.
And I have to tell you, everything you said was spot on. And I met some incredibly smart individuals that had some really great insights. And, you know, ULI is I won't call it a developers club. It's not that. It's a group of all kinds of professionals. But everyone is looking, has an eye towards development and making the best development that we can. And the similarities here is RLI is trying to make the very, very best land brokers possible, the most knowledgeable, the most insightful, the most creative people on this planet to help put the best deals together so that the developers have something to actually develop.
We're talking to
a really great organization. Have nothing but great things to say about RLI.
We're talking to David Farmer. This is Let's Talk Land. We're talking with David Farmer with Metro Forecasting Models, but our topic today is the Urban Land Institute. And, you know, this is a land show, David, and, you know, I've developed over 60 rural subdivisions myself. A couple of them were lot subdivisions, which I'll never do again. But in this area, as long as we stay 10 acres or more, we don't have to get the government involved. So they call me the dirt road developer, and I've been very successful at it over the years. Your aspect from the commercial development side is totally different in terms of land. How is that, and can you give us some insight?
Sure. Well, when I think of land, most people just want to find a piece of dirt so they can build something on it. And what many of those that aren't in the development business or even in the land brokerage business might not realize is that there's this word, and it's called entitlement. And we're not talking about federal programs here. We're talking about what land is entitled to become someday.
Okay.
And there's many aspects to land entitlement. In fact, actually, I just taught a class in Arlington, Texas, in the beginning of June for RLI about entitlements and such. Got to tell some of my war stories, some of the times where things didn't go as I had hoped or planned.
Right.
But land entitlement, at its very, very essence and core, so a building permit, Lou, is an example of an entitlement.
Okay.
A building permit allows you to build a house. Well, when we talk about land, we need to know what the zoning of the land is. Now, there are some areas around the country that don't use zoning, but more times than not, there's going to be some police power that the local government can use to constrain or restrict our use of the land to certain things that they believe are beneficial to society. And so when we talk about land, we really want to understand what are the entitlements that are going with it. Is it zoned properly? And let's say it is. Let's say you wanted to build a shopping center.
Okay.
And it's zoned commercial. Well, good for you, Lou. You got a good piece of land. The next question should be, how big is that piece of land? Is it big enough? Because people will find that, a piece of land has the right zoning, and it turns out it's 2 acres. Well, that's not big enough to build a neighborhood shopping center on. You'd like 10 acres to build one of those. So once we have the zoning and we get the size, then the next question becomes, well, does it have the right, or does it have any implications with wetlands or endangered species? Does it have any contaminants on it from a prior user? Did someone, have a gas station nearby or something like that? So when you go through the process, hopefully the broker that they're working with, an ALC or someone else, is going to point out that the property is either fully entitled, ready to go, or it needs some of these things cleaned up along the way, and can help guide people that are looking for these pieces of dirt to do exactly what they want. And again, maybe it's a church, maybe it's an assisted living facility, an apartment complex, or as you call it, a dirt road subdivision, that you still need to have certain qualities about that and make sure you have the right entitlements to be able to do the kind of project that you want.
So, in the land business that I'm in, we talk about the concept of highest and best use. Is that the same as entitlements? I know the difference, but for our listening audience, can we kind of talk about those two?
Sure.
And how they...
So, highest and best use, in some respects, looks at the entitlement, but it also, to some extent, ignores the entitlement as well.
Okay.
So, the classic definition of highest and best use, the simplest definition is, Lou, how can I make the most money with this piece of land?
Right.
And so we can look at the existing zoning and say, well, it's zoned for a single-family residential. Okay, well, then based on how many homes per acre I can put on that, the land has a certain value. But if I take those constraints off for a moment and say, well, I don't care what the land is zoned, I really think this location is ideal for an industrial project or some sort of a commercial office building. And so if that was the case, then you can figure out what the value of the property is, and whatever returns us the highest value is our highest and best use. And so part of it is entitlement, because I can wish to do an office project on your piece of land, Lou, but if it's not entitled for it, I can wish all day, it's not going to happen, and therefore I shouldn't buy that piece of land to build an office building because it's not allowed. However, many of these entitlements can be changed depending on the location. It can be very difficult or quite easy to be able to change from residential to commercial or vice versa.
Gotcha. What else can we talk about that?
Well, let's talk, you brought up highest and best use. A term I'd also like to bring up that isn't well talked about is residual land value. And something that a lot of rookies have a hard time wrapping their head around is that land can actually have a zero value or even sometimes a negative value.
Interesting.
And to explain that, let me go back in time to a very painful time, Lou. Let's go back to 2008.
Okay.
There were national home builders that were that were unfortunately stuck with lots here in Southwest Florida. Not unfortunately, but they were stuck with lots of those lots, many numbers, and there was one national builder that wound up fire selling their land at, I think it was like $5,000 a lot, and this was in a place where they were building, pre-crash, they were building homes for $300,000-$500,000, and I remember thinking, they're just being silly.
Yeah.
They're giving away this land. But what I didn't realize is that national home builder actually had a very long view. And I wasn't privy to their expenses at the time. They later informed me the reason why they fire sold those lots is because it was costing them about $5,000 to $8,000 a year in holding costs between fees and taxes and those kinds of things.
Right.
And so they foresaw it was going to take 4 to 5 years to come back. So the way they looked at it is, hey, this is going to cost me $40,000 to hold this thing, so I might as well just fire sale it now. They were very smart in the process, and the person that wound up buying the lots from them wound up paying all those fees because they weren't quite as knowledgeable as their seller. Again,
right.
Another good reason to have an accredited land consultant helping you with the purchases of your property. There are a lot of ways to go wrong when you're buying land.
Absolutely.
So make sure you have a good professional there helping you guide your way through that. So in other words, and I talked about land having negative value. Again, back in the doldrum days of 2007 to 2010, basically, for Florida, if your cost to own the land exceeded the amount of money you could make with it, it actually, if you do this residual land calculation, it shows you can have negative value. Another way to put a hammer on that nail, let's say I buy a two-acre lot in an emerging area, and I want to put a building on it. And the way residual land value works is you say, okay, what can I sell this thing for when I'm all done? And let's say if you didn't even want to sell it, if you just went, well, I'm just going to rent it out and want to create an income-producing property, well, that income-producing property still has a value at the end of the day. So
right.
You have to establish that. Let's call it $2 million.
Okay.
Well, if I can build that building for $1.5 million, that means that the land underneath it is worth about $500,000. But in the case of if the building is only worth $2 million and it cost me say $2.5 million to build that building, then the land has a negative value associated with it. I'm not saying it's worthless. I'm just saying
sure.
In the context, if I want to build my office building on your 2 acres and all those costs hold as I just went over, in other words, that I can sell it for $2 million, but it's going to cost me $2.5 million to build it, then that land has negative value. So residual land value is this concept where we take the completed cost and subtract off all the costs to get to the finished product, and whatever's left over is what the land is worth.
Right.
I was teaching a class out in Phoenix back in February, and when I'm in a location doing instruction work, what I like to do is pull up local listings to get an idea of what the market's like.
Okay.
And I wound up pulling up a listing that I actually shared with the guys, the ALC guys in Texas, and I showed him how this place in Phoenix. The broker, who was not on ALC, had actually underestimated what the value of the property was. They put the property out there as one thing. I think it was for industrial uses. And it turns out, actually, the highest and best use for that was residential.
Hmm.
And from a residential basis, the property was underpriced by over $1 million.
Wow.
Meaning that if you use the residual land value technique, you would have understood that that property was actually a steal at the asking price because of what you could do with it residentially. Anyway. So there's residual land value. I think it's very important, and it, again, ties into those and back into the entitlements in terms of what you can do with the property, and then using residual land value to figure out how you can increase the value of property.
Interesting. So, that's something that I was aware of, but you've really laid it out. What a great explanation. And for those that's listening, you may want to wind it back and listen to that explanation again, because that was strike on, real good. So what other aspects in, are involved in land development?
Well, a lot of people talk about market studies. And, market studies can be very helpful to understand what the demand is for a certain use in a given area. Sometimes the government will ask you for a market study to help understand why you want to rezone this property from, say, residential to commercial, which is a common rezone. And the market study, in its essence, is really, it should be a research project. And hopefully you use someone that's local. With that said, don't use someone that's local that doesn't know what they're doing. You need to make sure that they have expertise in this. But all things being equal, I would like to use someone from Florida than someone from New York City, because
right.
Florida is a unique market, and someone from New York City doing a desktop analysis for me would probably miss some of the nuances that are important to my project down here. So when you're looking to do a project, again, working with your accredited land consultant or your broker trying to find a piece of land, try to use consultants that are local to the area, again, that have expertise. Anyway, these market studies can help understand if there's a pent-up demand for product, and also what's in the pipeline. And by pipeline, I mean there are projects that are in motion that we can't see, right? With most business, and land's just another business, you don't want your competition necessarily to know what you're up to. At some point now, when you make application to the city or the county to develop your project, now you're on public record. With that said, it's not exactly published in the newspaper. The people that do these market studies, they research this pipeline, so they understand that, okay, let's say there's a demand for 1,000 new units. Well, that's wonderful news if I'm going to build a project, but it's not so wonderful if we realize there's 1,500 units already in the pipeline ahead of my project,
right.
Meaning that if I build, if I go ahead and move forward with my project, that I want to develop it, that I have probably a potential there won't be enough demand to have my project be successful in the end. So, again, along with entitlements, market studies can be quite helpful. They can be expensive. I would say that if you could spend just a little bit of money on one, a few thousand dollars, to get just an idea, an inkling of what's going on in the area, that would probably suit you well. These things can run up to $50,000 to $75,000. And for the right project, they're worth their weight in gold. But in the end, just like an appraisal, there's someone's opinion based on research, but
right.
They're an opinion. And it doesn't matter what someone sometimes puts in these reports or an appraisal. If you're the owner, it's where the rubber meets the road. If you can't sell the product, it's just a function of the market,
Just real quick for this next interlude here. Has the lot inventory, has that kind of been liquidated, or is there still areas around the country? I know Mark Rogers, who was the national president for the Association of Auctioneers, they had their conference a number of years ago. I think it was 2009, maybe in 2010, in Atlanta, and he came back and we were talking, and he said, there's enough lot inventory in the greater Atlanta area to last for 10 years. Has that been absorbed is currently, or where are we that now?
Well, if you're talking about specifically Atlanta, I haven't researched.
No, but I'm just saying overall in the areas that you're in, is that we were talking about lots and liquidating them for $5,000.
Yeah, depending on where you're,
is the demand back?
Florida, there are, and again, real estate's very local. And so even though the metropolitan area that I'm in, the Cape Coral, Fort Myers, Naples area, has about 1 million people.
Okay.
And there are elements, there are areas within that market that have plenty of lots, like Cape Coral. And Cape Coral is a wonderful place to live.
Sure.
But there are tens of thousands of vacant lots that are ready to be built on today. There is another area in Lee County called Lehigh Acres. Again, it has tens of thousands of lots that are available. But as you can imagine, just because they're available doesn't mean it isn't a desirable place. The very best lots, of course, are always built on first. And so it's these ones that are a little further away from the shopping center, a little further away from your job, and a little further away from school that are taking longer to sell.
Right.
But again, within our markets, there are also areas that are very, very constrained. Our area tends to demand more of a modern subdivision, whether it's gated or not, that has modern conveniences and amenities such as golf courses and such. And the pre-platted areas, such as Cape Coral and Lehigh Acres, don't offer what people come to expect today. These areas were platted, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and long before these big master plan subdivisions were even really conceived of.
Right.
And so some of those areas, the absorption there is much slower because, again, there's tens of thousands of these vacant lots. But then there are other areas, like when you get closer to the city of Naples, there's just no land to be had. And if you can find a small house and tear it down and build a better one or build multiple homes, people are doing that as quickly as they can.
Yeah, with that news...
not enough land inventory.
With that news, we're talking to David Farmer. This is Let's Talk Land. David, we're talking about the Urban Land Institute and you know, what's some of the models and classes and stuff do they offer that our listening audience may be interested in and maybe even joining or being part of?
Right. Well, ULI is a great clearinghouse of just some fantastic information. ULI uses some of their members to do instruction work, and then they have other people, I'm also a member, but like myself, that teach some of the more complex classes, but they're always taught by actual, real, hands-on developers, not academics, so that at least when it comes to the development side of things, there might be a finance class taught by an academic, but
right.
But generally, these classes are taught by people that have actually done it, actually made the mistakes, and can help guide people or help them understand the career or the line of work they're trying to break into. But there's just some phenomenal people. There's Alan Razek out of Philadelphia. He's a world-class architect that morphed into a development consultant. He just helped with a big commercial project out in Camden. It was a new basketball stadium, I think, out there. There's another guy named Charlie Long who does urban infill development in the Oakland area. He teaches a very fine class using the case studies from the projects he's done over his very long career. Again, so it's all hands-on, good stuff. You know, there's a lot of people out there trying to sell education or continuing education. It's so that, you can basically say you took a class, but ULI, and I'll say RLI too, is not about selling classes. It's about really trying to impart the highest quality, best information possible to those attending the classes so that they walk away with a really good understanding of what they need to be successful in the business. It's with RLI, it's within land brokerage, and with ULI, it's in land development. So one of the things we talk about a lot in almost all the classes is a good four-letter word, and no, it's not that one, Lou.
Uh-oh.
It's another one.
Shout out, close your ears.
It's risk. People wonder why. Well, why do you need to make so much money if you're a landlord? Well, it's because there's a lot of risk. Well, why do you want so much money for your land when you're selling it, Dave? Well, because I've entitled a lot of risk in this process by owning the property, paying taxes on it, and waiting for a better day. And that's why that's the upside is the reason why people take risk is so that they can hopefully make some dollar bills at the end of the day. But it's all too easy to overlook the risk that's involved with land development and with land acquisition and even with owning land. You know, I can't tell you, Lou, how many times that I've met someone's grandmother or someone's grandfather, and they have the philosophy of, well, if it's worth $1 today, it's worth $2 tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, what they don't go is to the third day, which it goes back to a dollar again.
Yeah.
People don't realize that land goes up and down in value as the economy cycles.
Exactly.
And it isn't a constant linear upswing. So ULI helps really drive that point home that this is a risky business, and that if things are bad, they might get good again. But if they get good, it doesn't mean they won't get bad again. And just to be aware of all these things. Also, ULI is really good about bringing a lot of finance discussion to the table, so that people understand, you know, what, not just what the rates are. A banker can tell you what you know, the lending rates are, but what to expect when you're doing a loan. Like, a lot of people don't realize when you're doing a commercial building, you might have a mortgage on amortized over a 25 or 30-year period, but that loan's only good for 5 years. That means every 5 years you're chasing down a new banker or a new bank to try to renew your loan for you. Again, a lot of people that aren't in the development business don't realize that, but ULI helps bring that discussion about. Mm-hmm. Something else, too, is budgeting. Now, if you're asking so much for your land, Lou, I know exactly what that's going to cost me. But what I don't know is how much are those roads going to cost me, and how much is it going to cost to clear the land, and how much is it going to cost to change the zoning? And so ULI's got some great courses on helping to budget for those things and understanding, again, you know, as we do these land development, these costs do vary somewhat across the country. In some cases, they vary quite a bit. But in many cases, you know, the cost of a 2x4 or the cost of a yard of concrete is fairly similar. And so these are useful types of things.
So how many classes?
Touched on residual land value.
Right.
But there are many, many ways to value property. And as you know, as a broker, ULI helps educate people on what NOI is, the net operating income, and how to use that, and then of course doing discounted cash flow with time value of money. These are the tools that developers use to help decide, Lou, when they're coming to you with one of your clients trying to sell land, how much is the land worth to them based on the risk involved and based on the long-term financial aspects of the project.
How many, David, how many classes does ULI currently provide? I mean, like,
oh my goodness,
like the Realtors Land Institute,
I don't know.
We have 15.
12, maybe 15.
Okay.
And those are the classes that are offered on at least once a year. And then there's some specialty classes that they offer every few years as they feel that there's enough demand for.
Right.
But there's quite a few. I'd say about a third of them are finance-based. About a third of them are entrepreneurial based, meaning they're for new developers and for networking, and then the other third are more nuts and bolts, you know, not how to build a building like you are the contractor, but if you're going to build a 20-story building, these are the kinds of things you need to be knowledgeable about when you're talking with the architect, when you're talking with the engineer, when you're talking with the contractor, because there's so many minefields that you can step into without even realizing how much risk you're taking on. Again, these courses help the attendee have a much better understanding, not perfect, but a much better understanding of the risks that are involved in those aspects that maybe don't come naturally to them.
So the current economy at the time, and we can go back in history, and we can project the future, but the current economy has a lot to play in this, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely does. You know, when the economy's doing well, there's a good demand for land and for housing and commercial projects. And of course, when the economy falters, not so much.
Yeah.
And as a corollary to that too, you know, I will tell you that at least in Florida here, Lou, I can't tell you what happened up in North Carolina, but down this way, it was clear that demand was on the rebound in 2011, 2012, 2013. So the economy could have done much better, but the lenders, and I'm not blaming anyone, but the lenders were really gun-shy. Why? Well, they had just lost. I worked with one lender, I'm not going to name them, but I worked with one of them, and I think they were in the hole $600-700 million on bad loans. Well, when you do that, you're not really looking out to make a whole lot of new loans for the same thing that you just lost a whole bunch of money on.
Yeah, yeah.
So it took the banks a really long time to become lending again, even though the economy could have been going great, but because there was no fuel to the fire, no money, it was very difficult for developers to get moving. As a case in point, a bank hired me to review a project back in, I think it was 2013. It took them 9 months to underwrite a $15 million loan.
Wow.
Now, $15 million is a lot of money, but in the context of land development, it's really not very much money at all, but it took them 9 months. Normally, that would have taken like 30 to 60 days to review that, but because, again, everyone was so gun-shy and had been just experienced all these horrific losses, they were really not looking to take on any more losses. That project that I'm just referencing turned into a slam-dunk home run and was actually sold out in, I think, less than 5 years, like 4.5 years. It was fully built out. again, made oodles of money because they got the land right and they hit the market just right. But what really made that project successful was that the bank was willing to step in and say, yep, I'm willing to lend you this money. We think that that this is going to be a good project. So, again, not just the economy, but lenders. So what we're experiencing now is the lenders are now much more friendly. They're not giving away free money like they were back in 2004 and 2005.
Right.
In fact, it's very, very difficult to borrow money to buy raw land. But it's generally, I'll use the word easy, to get a loan to do a development project if you already own the land. Banks look now at land as equity.
Right.
And so if you own the land outright and you're doing a medium-sized project, oftentimes the land itself will be your down payment. So from that standpoint, things are really on the upside. And, you know, who knows what the future holds for us, but certainly from where I'm sitting today, it looks like we have at least 2 or 3 years of nice, strong growth in front of us throughout the country.
Right.
Of course, you never know about these black swan events like, you know, 9/11, but you can't live your whole life waiting for those to happen.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Hey, let me ask you a question, David. Population shifts, how does that affect? You know, there's, you know, over the years, we've watched certain parts of the country for many reasons, people bailing out and moving to other parts that are just booming. You're sitting there doing a projection, you know, with all the tools you have, and all of a sudden you lose 10% of your population or you gain 10%. I mean, is that part of what you factor in? Or?
Well, absolutely. So this is now getting a little bit away from ULI that I talk a little bit about these in classes, but
okay.
That is the essence of how we calculate demand. It's the movement of people. And as you can imagine, people that up in the Michigan area, Michigan's a fine state, but
right.
It gets a little cold in the wintertime. And so I would say there's probably more people moving to Florida than there are Michigan. But because of, you know, Lou, your generation, the baby boomers, you know, in the old days, my parents had one house. Well, in the current situation, many, many boomers now have two houses, right? They have a summer place and a winter place.
Right.
And so this is creating and injecting new demand in markets. In fact, right up, Lou, right up by your way, I was just talking with one of the counties up there that's along the coast. One of them was New Hanover, another
right.
one was, I think, Brunswick.
Yep.
Brunswick was telling me that they had to bring in the police from the adjacent three counties to control their traffic because in high season, their police force wasn't near large enough to be able to handle all the motorists and all the people visiting there.
That's true.
So certainly people moving about has a great impact on demand for land, and of course, the corollary is land pricing as well. When there's a lot of demand for housing and for commercial services, usually the commensurate value of the vacant land around it tends to go up dramatically. And we know where a commercial building might go up 100%, the land itself might go up by 100% in value in that same period of time because of the scarcity.
Highways and airports, Wilmington we're talking about, that area down there, which is one of my favorite cities of all times. My kids went to school there. I used to own a townhouse down there, and it's about a four-hour drive. But you know, they expanded the airport a number of years ago, and then they brought Interstate 40 from Raleigh down all the way to Wilmington. And from that point forward, I mean, it just exploded. So stuff like that, highways, airport expansion, and so on. I mean, Charlotte, where I grew up, something similar happened, you know, in the 70s when they expanded the airport there. So these are things that you look at, too, the future planning of government projects. Is that correct? That's part of your formulation?
Absolutely. When the government's willing to make an investment in a community, be it a new highway or an airport expansion or something, generally those things roll off and pay huge dividends to the surrounding community. You know, one of the problems that some medium-sized communities have is they don't set enough land aside for industrial projects. And then the ones that do set aside land for industrial projects then don't maybe go out and market it with as much intensity as other areas. Like Auburn, Alabama has probably gets the gold star for going out and getting the very best companies to move into their area and provide jobs to all the college graduates that are graduating from the University of Auburn.
Right.
Again, they have a very they're making an investment in their community and it's bringing jobs, and then of course what jobs means, well, now those people got to live there and they got to put houses, and then there's more schools that need to be built, and so it's sort of a a positive cycling effect where we're feeding off each other. But yes, if you know that the government's going to be making an investment in an infrastructure in your area, generally not only are there immediate jobs to do that work, but there's more times than not, there's going to be a very positive influence on the local economy, and sometimes even create new economies because of roads that go into areas that that weren't well serviced before. You know, one of the big drivers for growth is proximity to other growth. And as urban areas expand, in fact, we were just talking about this in Texas, that's called a transitional land. It's transitioning from a more rural use to a more urban, not urban, but more urban use.
Right.
You know, you're talking about your dirt lot subdivisions. Well, you know, someday, a long time from now, the highest and best use of those subdivisions that you develop with 10 acres and such might be to cut up those 10-acre lots into 10 one-acre lots as housing becomes more scarce and such. But, of course, that's going to take a long time from now. We have a lot of land here in America.
Yeah, we do.
But certainly, as government invests in our community, there are nice dividends coming back to landowners and the community as a whole, because now we have better infrastructure in place to get to work or go to a ball game or whatnot.
Exactly. With about 10 minutes left, David, I want to move, if we can, to some of your classes. There's four or five here that you teach. One is moving into the role of developer. Another one's titled Understanding the Real Estate Development Process. The third one is Introduction to Real Estate Development Process. And during the break, I got some clarification on that, but I'd like to expound upon that if you would. And then the fourth one is Financial Analysis for Development of Practical Information. And there's other classes you teach too. Which of these are your favorite? I mean, which ones do you just... feel good to teach, or all of them?
Like children, Lou. I should be asking you which one's your favorite son. I'm going to pick, I can't give you a favorite, but let me go down the line here.
Please.
So moving into the role of developer, that is a new part, and that's only like a three-year-old program. It's part of ULI's entrepreneurial program.
Uh-huh.
Where it's not all lecture-based. A lot of the instruction that we do is lecture-based, where we're trying to impart a lot of knowledge in a short period of time to the classes. But this class is very different in that about half of the class, it's a two-day class, and half of it is comprised of local developers that we bring in, and we have them speak on a subject for about an hour and a half as a panel. So we have two, three, or four people, and they're talking about what was the worst deal I did, how did it blow up, what was the best deal that I did. And then maybe another panel might be on what are my finance considerations? So you can hear from not just one developer, but three, four, or five developers right in real time in the area you're in right now on what they're doing to secure funds for their projects and what successes they're finding in the marketplace that these new people might be overlooking in the area. So that's a really fun class. Again, it's only about half instruction. The other half are these panels. And then the next one is Understanding the Real Estate Development Process. Now, that is a three-day, call it a boot camp for land development. We're going to touch on a little bit on all the subjects from marketing to land acquisition, site selection, due diligence, some basic skills about discounted cash flow. We'll talk about highest and best use. And of course, we're going to talk about risk for those 3 days as well. And there's actually hands-on work in that class where people are going to get their hands dirty working in spreadsheets. And we have a mock-up of an apartment multifamily project. And we have the class go through and help build up the spreadsheet. And then at the last part of that of the class, we actually have them do sensitivity analysis where some of the expenses change, they go up or down, or some of the rents change, go up and down, and you can see how sometimes a very small number is inconsequential, means nothing, and sometimes a very small number equates into a very, very large profit or loss. And it's, again, trying to tune the class to which line items are very sensitive to their success or failure. We've been teaching that class for, I don't know, 15 years. And out of that, we got two comments. One was, hey, I can't always travel around the country. That the understanding of the real estate class, that one bounces between the East Coast and the West Coast once per year. So this last year we were in D.C., so that means next year we'll probably be in California when we teach that class or somewhere out that way. So some people don't want to travel that far or can't. And so there was a clamoring for, hey, you know, could you do this in a webinar format? And so ULI had yours truly take that class, which is over 24 hours of instruction, and compress it into 10 hours.
Wow.
And, of course, some things need to be muted, or, you know, we can't talk about everything in the same period of time.
Sure.
So we remove the part about discounted cash. So we talk about it, but we don't, obviously, in a webinar, it's very hard to stand behind a student and say, hey, this is the mistake you're making in your spreadsheet kind of thing. And so that's been very well received. And that's a six-part webinar, two webinars per week. They're each 2 hours for 3 weeks. And so that way, if you can't travel to California or Washington, D.C., you can still get an essence of what that class is like.
Okay.
And then the last one that you mentioned was financial analysis for developers, a practical introduction. This class was designed for those that, basically, we took the four-hour section in the three-day class that focuses on financial analysis, and we expanded it to 2 full days to give people the opportunity to slowly absorb a lot of really detailed information about finance that they aren't normally privy to or aware of. Now, this is a very introductory class. It's not designed for MBAs or financial wizards, but it's for those that are trying to just get a better understanding of how developers look at finance and how finance impacts projects. So I just taught that class in the middle of June in D.C., and we actually had a couple people from New York, from the one of the title companies, sent their people there because they wanted to get a better understanding of how developers look at these. Again, it goes back to ULI, and that they're a great clearinghouse of information. They don't try to sell you anything. There's no spin. It's just the facts. And the instructors and the other students we all want everyone to succeed. So we're going to give you the best information possible, the best advice possible, to try to help you be successful in your project. But again, the very first thing, one of the very first things that I talk about when I'm teaching, a sin that you can never get over is paying too much for the land. And so that's why it's really important, again, to have an accredited land consultant and to understand residual land value so that you don't overpay for the land up front. And if you do that up front, it's like the beginning of a bad marriage. It's just not going to get any better.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's just a quick recap, Lou, of the classes that we teach.
There's some other ones, David, that I noticed. Real estate finance and investment proposal template, evaluating project visibility, time value of money concepts. Another class is real estate development process, the ABCs of land development. I may be redundant on a couple of these. Using census and local government data, vacant spaces to vibrant places. A pro forma modeling is an investment pro forma, construction draws, rent rolls, investment waterfall. What's an investment waterfall?
Oh, so an investment waterfall is when you and I can't agree on how much money I should make, Lou. It's sort of like today.
Gotcha.
Just kidding. You know, let's say that I want to make all the money. You and I are going to be partners, Lou, and so you're going to put up all the money, and I'm going to take all the profit. Is that okay with you, Lou?
Yeah, sure, since I know you.
Yeah.
Hell no.
Okay. Then you and I need to be partners, because I can't find a single partner that will put up all the money and let me keep all the profits. So when you get to the discussion of how much profit someone should have, well, Lou, if I bring you a piece of land, and I say, you know what, Lou, if we built 100 homes on this piece of land, we're going to make millions. A little problem, Lou, is I don't have all the money, and so can you put some up? Can you put up all of it and make the down payment to the bank? And you say, well, sure. And then the next thing is we say, well, then how much should I get? You know, how much should Dave get for bringing that deal to you and being the guy that manages it through the process? And so we might come to a figure of, let's say you put up all the money, but you get 75% of the profits. I get 25% because I found the deal and I'm going to manage this. So you don't have to worry about me. I'm going to be the one whipping everyone and making sure this thing stays on track and make sure we both make a pile of money.
Gotcha.
That's a standard sort of real estate deal.
Okay.
A waterfall says, okay, Lou, I'm telling you, we're not going to make millions. We're going to make tens of millions. All right, this thing is worth a ton of money. So, and you're going to have to put $5 million into this deal, Lou. And you say, well, I'll tell you what, we'll be 75-25 partners, but when we get beyond, once I make all my money back, and then some, and let's say make, once you double your money, so once you get $10 million back, then at that point you realize that, you know, you're only making that money because I brought the deal to you, and so you say, well, we'll do a waterfall. We're going to have When once Lou's doubled his money, then Dave, instead of you getting 25% of the profits, now you're going to get 75% of the profits, and Lou's only going to get 25% of the profits.
Right. Yeah, I did that on one. Yeah.
Of a continuous waterfall, the more hurdles you hit, the more money that someone makes in the end.
I did that on a development with three other partners, and it worked out really well, by the way. We got down to two parcels left, and this is a 252-acre tract. I broke up, and I think 34, 36 pieces, but we got down and sold everything but two tracts, which were two 10-acre tracts, and we decided to put the name in the hat and number each lot, and we all drew, and that's the lot you got, and we completed the partnership. So alike but different. There's another one called Portfolio and Asset Management, Risk Management in the Age of Derivatives, Creating Reliable Valuations and Underwriting Investments. Then there's one called Residential Development, Best Practice of Marketing and Leasing and Integrating Marketing and Management. And then there's Commercial Development, Construction Contracting, Underwriting, Office Investment, Hotel Proforma. And then one called Real Estate Marketing, International Sales and Marketing Using Social Media Marketing Techniques. And finally, Public-Private Development, Public-Private Partnerships, Why and How to Create Value-Add Conversations. So it looks like RLI, you guys' current courses are up to the current market needs. I saw that one on social marketing, and that's where a lot of this stuff's going. I know we're doing a whole lot more of it than we used to, and very successfully, by the way. So, like I said, it seems like the and I didn't really know that much about the Urban Land Institute. I just hadn't taken the time. Actually, when I teach my my classes, I talk about RLI and you, Urban Land Institute, and then I ask anybody in the class if they're familiar with Urban Land Institute. And quite frankly, I just haven't found many. And that's one reason I wanted to do a show. And you've been the perfect guest, David, to explain and support the Institute and with your diligent teaching instruction and commitment to a good cause. And this is good stuff. We only got about 5 minutes left. We want to give you a commercial, and I want to close out. Give me quickly like two or three points of what's important about what we talked about today.
Well, one of the most important things is you can't overpay for the land. You need to understand that there's a lot of risk in both investing in land and in real estate investment in general. It's important to have a really good knowledge base. So I encourage those out there to get some education. You can try the good old Google method. But more times than not, the way we learn best is by a little bit of pain. And so, I like to save my money too, but sometimes the best way is to actually pay and attend one of these classes, because if you're paying for it, you're more likely to pay a whole lot more attention than just scrolling on your computer. So get some education, and for goodness sakes, make sure you're using a good educated broker when you're looking for land, so that you don't overpay for the property and you make sure you get something with the right entitlements to be able to develop the kind of property that you want to develop.
Perfect. Just briefly, let's do a little commercial about your metro forecasting modeling.
I can talk about this for hours.
Well, we're gonna have another show on that.
I'm the CEO of Metro Forecasting Models. We are a nationwide population and growth forecasting company. Generally, we sell consulting and data analysis to governments that want to understand how their changes in land use or zoning might impact the community. For example, if they approve a big project, does that mean they might need a new fire station nearby? Well, who's going to pay for that fire station? These are the kinds of things that we do. Again, we work around the country. In fact, we did a forecast of the Wilmington area, New Hanover County, and back in 2015, I think. We're working in Alabama in two different locations there, and of course around the state of Florida. We also have information that's suitable for developers too, because we forecast when and where housing is needed. So developers can use that to help decide which land they want to buy.
How do they get in touch with you, David?
My email address is dave at metroforecasting.com. My website is www.metroforecasting.com. You can also just Google Metro Forecasting Models. We also have a YouTube channel with four or five videos about several of our products. And if I can be helpful to one of your listeners out there, by all means, give me a shout.
And how do they get in touch with the Urban Land Institute?
I would go to uli.org, and there's many pages of things to learn on there. I would encourage you to Google and find your local district council and attend one or two of their programs a year and meet some really great people.
David, you've been an incredible guest, and what a great subject. And I tell you, this is on my bucket list of one of the fine organizations out there, like the Realtors Land Institute. And you're a good ambassador, David. You appreciate your time today. Rodney, how do they get in touch with me or us?
Well, they can go to our website, Lou. That's WKTE1090.com, and click on the Let's Talk Land. And Hear us every Saturday morning right here on the New Wave from 7 to 8 o'clock. And also, you have a podcast.
Yeah, but you
now.
Can stream your show,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's right. We can stream it. Yeah, you can go to the Simple Radio app, download it, and you can tune it in there, or you can tune it in from the website.
And listen through all the shows
24/7,
anywhere in the world, right?
Anywhere in the world, yes.
Hey, thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests that you would like to recommend, contact me. We're always looking for anything to do with land. And any questions are always welcome. And anyone that's been on our show, like David Farmer today, he's available to contact with if you have questions. And all of my show guests have agreed to do that. So not only do you have a little education, but you have an outlet. The show is for the public and mostly importantly for the real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. And quite frankly, there just isn't a whole lot out there other than RLI and, of course, Urban Land Institute, and maybe a couple classes I teach. I have collected all of these shows. I think this is number 32 on my website, which is www.letstalkland.net, L-E-T, no apostrophe S, letstalkland.net. And also, we've now got it on Podbeam, Spotify, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube we're working on. So for those that like that type of communication, we've got that out there. And then for my real estate firm, you can contact me at lou@mylandpro.com, or you can call me at 336-669-1405. What a great show. Thanks, everybody.